In our series on prophecy, we have covered the major prophecies in the book of Daniel. We have examined in our previous sermon what the book of Daniel revealed in chapter 2, chapter 7, chapter 8, and we also looked at the introduction to the book of Revelation. Now, in chapter 2, just to review real quickly, we had the large image that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed about, interpreted by Daniel. Had the golden head representing Babylon, the arms and the chest of silver representing the Medes and the Persians, the midsection of brass or bronze, depending on the translation, representing the Greeks, the two iron legs representing the two divisions of the Roman Empire, and then coming out of the Roman Empire were going to be the 10 toes mixed with clay, and these were all contemporary kings because at the time of the end, a stone was going to come out of heaven without hands, and it was going to strike the 10 toes. So the 10 toes are destroyed at the return of Christ, which means the 10 toes all exist at the same time. And then we studied the book of chapter 7, the book of Daniel chapter 7. The book of Daniel chapter 7 is probably the most important prophetic book because it is the key to understanding almost all of the other prophecies. In Daniel chapter 7, we were told that the lion standing on its legs, a man's heart with the wings, represented King Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonians. Then we were told that the bear rising on its side with its three ribs, representing the three kingdoms it had conquered, was the Medes and the Persians. And then we had the leopard, which is extremely fast, but this one was very, very fast because it was given wings and it had four heads. The division of Alexander the Great's kingdom into four after his demise. So this represented the Greeks. And then we had the great, terrible, ugly beast with great iron teeth and brass or bronze claws that destroyed everything. It had seven heads on its horn, or seven horns, excuse me, on its head. Now, if you count up the heads in Daniel 7, you have seven heads. You have the head of the lion, the head of the bear, the four heads of the Greek leopard, which gives you six, and then you had the final great head of the great, ugly, indescribable beast with the seven horns. So that had a ten-horned head in it. Now, in chapter 8, it narrows down our prophetic lens, and we look at the Medes and the Persians represented by the ram, the two horns. One came up first, the second one came up second, but it came up higher, representing the Medes and the Persians that later dominated the kingdom. And then we had the billy goat or the he goat that represented the Greeks. And the first horn was the king of Greece, the first king, which was Alexander the Great. We understand Alexander the Great dies. His kingdom is divided into four, but given to his generals. So there's four horns that come up. Among these horns in Daniel chapter 8 and in Daniel chapter 7, there's a little horn that comes up. And it casts down three of the first horns. So three of these horns have been cast down, and there's seven left. And in Daniel chapter 8, those were the Medes and the Persians and the Greeks represented by the ram and the billy goat. And then we looked at the book of Revelation. We understood from our past sermon that the book of Revelation is a book of revealing exactly what the name says. It's not the book of hidden meanings or obscure prophecies. It's the book of revealing. So the first point we understood about last week's sermon, or the last sermon I gave on the series, was that the book of Revelation is a book of revealing. The second point about the book of Revelation is that it occurs, or that the theme of it is, on the day of the Lord, when all the events begin to happen that we read about in the various prophecies. And so in today's sermon, what we're going to do is we're going to take an in-depth look at Revelation 13. There are two beasts mentioned in Revelation 13. We're going to see how the prophecies in Revelation 13, how they build on what we have learned in the previous lessons. So the first thing we're going to do as we get into the book of Revelation and chapter 13 is we're simply going to review the book, review the chapter. So let's go to Revelation chapter 13. As I mentioned before, by looking at your chart, you see that Revelation 13 does not occur in chronological order. It's an inset chapter. It's a chapter that's put in there so that later on, when we read about the beast and the false prophet, we understand what we're reading. So Revelation 13 is not a chronological chapter. It's a chapter that gives us important information for us to help us understand with what's going on in the rest of the book of Revelation. Let's go ahead and just read from verse 1 in Revelation 13. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and this is the Mediterranean Sea. In the fall and in the winter, the Mediterranean Sea is very agitated. A lot of waves, a lot of foaming, a lot of currents. So we're looking at the Mediterranean Sea, and out of the sea, there's a beast. So this beast comes up out of the sea. Now in Daniel 7, we saw four beasts coming up. The lion, the bear, the leopard, and the great beast. In Revelation chapter 13, we see one beast only. Now it has seven heads and ten horns. And on its horns, it has ten crowns. So these are ten kings. And somewhere across the head is written a blasphemous name. All right. Now I want you to notice that in chapter 2, we have a description of the animal. It's not a leopard. It's sort of got a leopard's body, but it's not a leopard. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and his great authority. We all know who the dragon is. Saying the devil. And I want you to notice that this beast has the stronger parts of the four beasts that were in Daniel chapter 7. Verse 3, I saw one of the heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and its deadly wound was healed. So we see a head that is mortally wounded, and this head comes back to life. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So whatever this beast represents, the world followed. And some people think that it's a great false church. It is not. It is something else. And I'll show you that in a minute. But whatever it was something that was involved with the whole world marveling and worshiping it. Verse 4. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to this other beast. And they worshiped the beast saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with it? So the beast was a war-making machine, which eliminates it being a church, even a false church. Verse 5, and the beast, the he, was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. 42 months is 3.5 years, which is the same as 1,260 days, which is the same as times, which is plural, and half a time. So time, two times, and a half is 3.5 times, time being a year. So it's talking about 1,260-somethings. Verse 6, then he opened his mouth to blaspheme against God. So this beast blasphemes against God, blasphemes his name, blasphemes where he lives, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. Now, let me recall something to your memory. Who destroyed the temple, the tabernacle of God, the last time we had a sermon? What nation, what peoples? Keep that in mind as you read verse 6. Now, let's go to verse 7. This beast, whatever it was granted to make war with the saints and to overcome them. So this beast killed and martyred lots of the saints. And he was given authority over the whole world, tribes, tongues, and nations. All who dwell on the earth will worship him. Those who are not saints, because all of those will worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So if your name is not in the book of life, you're going to end up worshiping this beast. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. This is sort of like God saying to you, are you paying attention here? Are you listening? Because if you have an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with a sword must be killed with a sword. This beast was martyring and persecuting and killing all of the saints, whatever this beast was. And God is telling us through John that the beast that used the sword against other people, the sword would be used against the beast. The beast went into captivity, it took people into captivity, the beast would go into captivity. Whatever the beast was doing, it was going to come back onto him. And notice verse 10, here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Sometimes, brethren, we need to just wait. The people that were being killed by this beast were told, you just have to wait. You just have to go through this. You just have to be patient. What the beast has done will be done back to it. So this is what is said about the beast. So in the first 10 verses of Revelation 13, we read about a seven-headed, 10-horned beast that continues for 1,260 days, that gets its power from the dragon, that is able to make war, and that persecutes God's people. I told you that Revelation 13 dealt with two beasts. The first 10 verses deal with the first beast. There's another beast that's mentioned in verse 11. Then I saw another beast. This one didn't come up out of the sea. It came up out of the earth. And he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. We have a dragon, a lamb beast here. And it has two horns. And he, the dragon, lamb beast, exercises all the authority of the first beast. So the dragon, lamb beast uses the beast in the first 10 verses to do his will. Now, what is Satan's goal, or what is Satan striving to do? And let me tell you what he's striving to do. He's striving to kill us. I mean, you can butter it up and you can put it in nice sounding terms, but if it were not for God's protection and not for God's angels about us here today, we would be toast, brethren. Because all down through the ages, the dragon and this beast have been in cahoots together to destroy God's people. So in verse 12, the dragon beast, he exercises all the authority of the first beast in the first 10 verses and causes the earth and those who dwell on it to worship the first beast. So the first beast was worshipped. Whatever it was worshipped. Let me ask you a question. Can other things besides churches be worshipped? Verse 13, he performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men. Some people think that this is referring to events at the time of the end. There's a little duality here. Might be. In verse 14, and deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast. Now, here's something interesting. The dragon, lamb, beast, who controls the seven-headed, ten-horned beast, tells the world to make an image or a copy. The Greek word is icon. You heard of icon copiers? To make a copy or an image. So the dragon says, you know, there's this seven-headed, ten-horned beast, political power, and we're going to make a copy of this beast. We're going to make an image of it. Notice verse 15. He was granted power to give breath. I'm sorry, let's look at verse 14. Last part. Telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. Remember the great wound, the mortal wound, and it was healed? Well, we're going to make a copy of this. What's this copy going to do? He was granted power in verse 15 to give breath to the image of the beast. So the copy of the beast now is alive. He was given breath. And so this image of the first beast now lives. That the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So this image had the power. This image of the beast, this copy of the beast, had the power to kill those who wouldn't worship it. So not only was the beast being worshipped, but the lamb dragon beast made a copy of that beast that was worshipped, and the image was worshipped. And those who wouldn't worship the image were going to be killed. That's in verse 15. Verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. Right hand symbolizes what you do. Forehead symbolizes what you think. So there's a mark put on what you can do and what you can think. Verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. This mark had something to do with being able to sell and buy. And that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now we get into the number of the beast. Now I want you to notice something that it says about this number. Notice what it says. Verse 17, or the number of his name. So this number is going to name the beast. Whatever the number is, it's going to identify who the beast is. Because it says, or the number of his name. Verse 18, here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate. You know where it says count the cost? Same Greek word, calculate, count it. So this number can be counted. So this countable number is the identification of what the beast is. And it is also the number of the beast, the middle of verse 18, for it is the number of a man. And it is 666. So this number 666 has to do with several things. It can be counted, calculated. It is the number or the name of the beast. So it names the beast. It is the name of the beast. And it is also the name of a man. So this 666 has to identify the beast, has to identify the emperor or the ruler of the beast, and has to identify the people of the beast. All those things have to be done. Now, some people say that the number is, for example, the Pope. And if you do certain things with the Latin language, you can come up with the 666 being the vicar of Christ and various other things. But the Pope is not the beast. So it doesn't apply to the Pope, and I'll show you that later on. So let's review what we have read so far. In the first 10 verses of Revelation 13, which is an inset chapter, it's put in here to help the reader of Revelation understand what's going on. In other places it talks, you know, and then the beast and the false prophet were taken. Well, who's the beast? This is why we have this in here. In the first 10 verses, we have a description of a beast, of one animal, coming up out of the ocean, out of the sea. Seven heads and 10 horns. The 10 horns have crowns, which means they're ruling kings. The beast is a composite of a leopard, a lion, and a bear. It's got the strongest parts of those animals. What's the strongest part of a bear? Its paws. A bear can take a paw and break the back of a deer in a few seconds. Split seconds. People that have been attacked by bears, they remember the claws. The strongest part of a lion is its mouth, its teeth. It suffocates the prey with its teeth. Strongest part of a leopard is its real fast body. So the strongest part of these creatures is incorporated into this beast. This beast has seven heads and it has 10 horns. The beast had one of its heads that was mortally wounded. Mortally means it dies. You know, I had a mortal wound, that means it's going to kill me. And so this mortally wounded head is then revived. And because of the reviving of this mortally wounded beast, the whole world begins to worship the beast. The beast persecutes God's people. The beast wants everyone in the world to worship it, and it controls all of the world. The beast is going to go into captivity, and it's going to be destroyed, just as God tells his people, what the beast has been doing to you will be done to it. You just be patient and wait. That's the first 10 verses of Revelation 13. It deals with one beast. In Revelation 13 on, we deal with the lamb, dragon, two-horned beast. It looks like a lamb, but it speaks like a dragon. So we have a beast that's masquerading as Christ, or Christ-like. Christ being the lamb, the dragon being Satan the devil. Now, this beast of a dragon and a lamb with the two horns is the one that actually gives the authority and the power to the first beast in the first 10 verses. But this dragon lamb beast says, let's make an image of the first beast. And I'm going to breathe into it life, and the image is going to live. And it's patterned after the first beast. And the first beast, as it persecuted God's people, the image is going to persecute God's people. And the image, the beast that that is the image, also persecutes God's people. And then it has to do with a mark that it gives people. This image gives people a mark. And it also, this image has a number associated with it. All right? That's where we are in our reading of Revelation chapter 13. Let's get into what some of these symbols mean. Now, let me just mention something real quickly, if you haven't gotten it yet. Daniel 7 is the most important chapter we have studied because Daniel 7 identifies the lambs, identifies the lion, identifies the bear, identifies the leopard, identifies the great beast that's terrible with the iron teeth. And we identify those by going back to Daniel chapter 2. So we know that the lion is Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. We know that the bear is the Medo-Persians. We know that the Greeks are the lion, the leopard with the four heads. Remember the great horn into four? Four heads. And we know that the great, terrible, exceeding beast is the Roman Empire. Now, in Revelation chapter 13, John sees the Roman Empire after it had conquered all of the other beasts. You remember in Daniel 7, we read about each beast coming up individually, and we get to the last beast, and it's going around stamping and conquering everything. If we had been given a little bit more information, that one beast would have eaten up all the other beasts, because it did. The Roman Empire conquered all the other kingdoms. So when the Roman Empire conquered the Babylonians, the Medo-Persians, the Greeks, it took parts of their strongest attributes and made it part of its own. That's why in Daniel, in Revelation 13, we have a beast that looks like a combination of the others. Because the Roman Empire absorbed all those other kingdoms and took the strongest parts of that and made it its own. So in Revelation chapter 13, the first 10 verses, we are dealing with the Roman Empire. Revelation 13, the first 10 verses, we're dealing with the Roman Empire. This was the Roman Empire of about 31 BC to about AD 476. The time of the apostles and all of that. Daniel didn't see this Roman. Daniel didn't see this beast because his vision ended with the beast before it destroyed everything. But obviously in Revelation 13, this beast has finished destroying the other beasts and eating them and making up one beast, because that's what the Roman Empire did. So that means that whatever is occurring in Revelation chapter 13, verse 1 to 10, concerns the Roman Empire, the Holy Roman Empire. Now, it was called the Holy Roman Empire. It was not called the Holy Roman Empire because there was a church in it. It was called the Holy Roman Empire because the emperors were considered gods. And you had to, as a good Roman citizen, you had to worship and pay homage and respect to the gods of the land, which meant the emperor was your god. You might say, oh, that's strange. Well, it's kind of weird. Let me just give you some modern day interpretation of it. The Japanese in World War II, emperor was a what to them? God. So don't think it's too far-fetched. The Japanese worship the emperor as God. He was divine. Well, the Romans had the same thing. The emperor was divine, so he was a god. So the system of this Roman Empire in history is called the Holy Roman Empire because they worshiped the emperor. Now, I want you to notice something. Verse 2, there's a beast, body of a leopard, feet like a bear, mouth like a lion, dragon, power, throne, great authority. Conglomeration of the Roman Empire. So this beast here is the fourth beast of Daniel chapter 7. It's the Roman Empire, the Holy Roman Empire. Now, if you look at your history, what happened, and I'm not going to go into all the historical details, don't have time. But if you look at history, there were three barbarian kings that wanted to take over the Roman Empire. And these three barbarian kings, remember there was 10 horns? These three barbarian kings, through the help of the Pope and various political intrigues, these three barbarian kings were disposed of. And then, right after this, Rome fell into a moral decline. They had moral problems and they rotted from the inside out. And the empire was dissolved. It ceased to exist. Justinian, one of the emperors, in 554, this happened about 470, 470, 480, something like that, went into a period of decline. The empire ceased to exist. In 514, or 554, let me make sure I got my dates right, 554, Justinian, one of the emperors, allied himself with the great false church. And he restored the Roman Empire. It was called Justinian's Imperial Restoration. You remember you read in Revelation 13 where one of the heads was wounded to death and then it was healed? The healing was Justinian's Imperial Restoration. So through allies with the Catholic Church, the great false church, you know what universal means? Universal means Catholic. So through the great false universal church, the empire was restored again. And the church and the government were almost one and the same. They complemented each other. From that point on, all of the Roman empires, Charles the Great, all the way to Napoleon, were crowned by whom? By the popes. The popes gave them the authority. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure what the name of the pope was, but the pope who crowned Napoleon traveled for many months to be able to place the crown on Napoleon's head. Then once Napoleon was made emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, he crowned his wife Josephine. Another story there. But all the leaders of Europe at that time, which was the Roman Empire, were all crowned at the behest of the pope. This continued from 554, when Justinian's imperial restoration took place, to 1814, when Napoleon suffered his last battle, defeated. So Napoleon's empire was dissolved in 1814. From 554 to the fighting of Napoleon's last battle in 1814 was 1,260 years. So that was the time period that the beast was going to be ruling the earth. Now, let's look at some of the things that the beast did besides having its head wounded. And in verse 4, this beast, the Roman Empire, who can make war with it? It wasn't a church. This was a national entity. It was a nation. Who is like the beast in verse 4? Who is able to make war with it? He was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies and given authority to continue for 1,260 years. From 554, Justinian's imperial restoration, when the mortal wound was healed, until the time of Napoleon Bonaparte when he lost his last battle. and the Pope no longer crowned kings. Verse 7, it was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. This is not the church. This is the Roman Empire. Here's what would happen, brethren. You would go pay your taxes. You were a citizen of Rome, and you would go pay your taxes. And, you know, they would make a determination of whatever your taxes were. You would go to the tax office, and you would pay it. After you finished paying taxes, there was a bowl of incense there. You would get the bowl of incense, there was a fire, and you would say words to the effect of, long live the emperor. Because that was part of emperor worship. You were offering incense to the divine God who was the emperor. You're a Christian. Can you do that? No. So what happened is, because the Christians refused to participate in emperor worship, they were persecuted. They were not persecuted, you know, Nero and all these emperors did not persecute God's people because they were keeping the Sabbath and because they were doing some weird religious things. They were persecuting them because they would not involve themselves in emperor worship and Mithra worship, which was based on Sunday. I mean, you could be an atheist and long live the emperor, and they would leave you alone. Because they would not do this, they were persecuted. Hold your place there. Let's go to Revelation chapter 3, or chapter 2. We have the seven church eras. And in chapter 2 and verse 1, to the angel or the apostle of the church of Ephesus write, the Ephesus church, the Ephesian church, was a church of the apostles. Peter, Paul, John, all of them. About 100, 150 years later, we come to verse 8. And to the angel of the church of Smyrna write. Notice. Verse 10. Do not fear any of these things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. And you will have tribulation 10 days. During one of the emperor's rules, I think it was around from 300 to about 310, there was a systematic attempt to wipe out Christianity because they did not want to involve themselves in emperor worship. This was not the Catholic Church that was doing this. This was the Roman Empire, the Holy Roman Empire. So going back to Revelation 13, in verse 7, he was granted to make war with the saints. Why? Because they wouldn't involve themselves in emperor worship. Go above that to verse 6. Then the beast opened his mouth in blasphemy against God. You know, there's no God. We're going to now worship the gods of Greece and Babylon. We're going to now institute Mithra sun worship. And notice, and to blaspheme his name, obviously that comes with that, his tabernacle. Do you remember in our series, our sermon series here on prophecy, about any general, Roman generals that destroyed the temple? That's what it's referring to. They refer to this tabernacle. And then in verse 7, make war, authority was given to it. Verse 8, all that dwell on the earth are going to worship the Holy Roman Empire. So in verse 1 through verse 10, we have the dealings of the Roman Empire and emperor worship, and how it impinged on and made it possible for the Roman citizens to persecute the church. All done under the auspices of the beast. No church yet. Verse 11. Then I saw another beast. Talks about the dragon. You probably don't even have to turn your page. Go over to Revelation chapter 12. Verse 7, and war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. Verse 8, 9, so the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old. Who is the dragon in Revelation 13? You don't have to interpret it, it's Satan. So Satan is masquerading as a lamb, speaking as a dragon. He's got two horns, one the state, the other religion, or the church, involved in both of them. So here we have Satan, verse 12. He's the one that's actually given the Roman Empire its power. You know what Satan wants? Satan wanted the Roman Empire to destroy Christianity. Satan wanted the Roman Empire to destroy Christianity. That's why Satan instituted emperor worship and all these things that would bring out the Christians so they could be persecuted. History is going to repeat itself, brethren. Verse 12, he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. All the world worships the Roman Empire, whose deadly wound was healed by Justinian's imperial restoration. I'm paraphrasing here. Verse 14, he, the lion or the dragon, deceives those who dwell on the earth by the signs he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast. We have an image here of the beast. An image is a copy. What was the original? The original was the Holy Roman Empire. Do we have a religious organization that you know of that is modeled after the Roman Empire? It has at its head the emperor, whose name was Papa. Do you know of a religious organization that has as its head a man who they named Papa, the father? The same model as the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire was involved in Mithra sun worship, wasn't it? Yes. Was the great false church involved in Sunday worship? Yes. The Roman Empire persecuted God's people? Yes. Did the image of the Roman Empire, which was a false church, persecute God's people? Yes. So everything that the... So since the Roman Empire had gone out of existence, then Satan empowered an image to be made of it so that he could use the image to try to destroy the church. Read about what happened to the church at the hands of the true church at the hands of the great false church during the Middle Ages, when this beast was ruling the earth for 1,260 days. Verse 15, he was granted power to give breath to the image. So this great false church, patterned after the national image of the Roman Empire, with its emperor worship and Sunday worship and all of the holidays that go with it. Isn't it interesting, brethren, that there's a great false church and it has the same holidays that the Roman Empire has? Don't you find that interesting? That it keeps Christmas, that it keeps Ishtar, and all of these holidays. February, Valentine's Day. I mean, study into them. They're all Romans. You know where the Romans got them? From the Babylonians. That's why the beast has got a little bit of each of the other beasts in it. It absorbed some of their religion, some of their culture, some of their art. Verse 15, the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Was there ever a time when there was a false church that was patterned after the Roman church, and if you didn't worship the false church, you were killed? Yep, fulfills this scripture right here. Verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. So now we get to now we're going to come and talk about the mark of the beast. Now the beast is the Holy Roman Empire. The image of the beast, or the copy of the beast, is a great false church patterned after the Holy Roman Empire. Sometimes it goes by the name the Holy Roman Universal Church. Why would it be called Roman? Because it has a lot of attributes of the Roman Empire. I'm not going to go into all of them. There's thousands of them. Just get a good book and read about it. Now, let's hold our places here. And let's go to Exodus chapter 31. There's a mark of the beast, brethren. Exodus 31. Do you know that God marks you, brethren? God has put his mark on you. Exodus 31. Verse 13. Speak also to the children of Israel, Exodus 31, 13, saying, surely my Sabbaths you shall keep. Notice it didn't say the Jewish Sabbaths you should keep, or the Israeli Sabbaths you should keep, or the Sabbaths of the house of Israel you should keep. Surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sets you apart. You know what one of the things is that sets us apart as a church and you as church members is you keep the Sabbath. You know what setting apart, you know, you set something apart, it's a little bit different. Now in this context, it's holy and different. But if you want to do something that really sets you apart from everybody, worship on a different day. So here it says that the Sabbath is our sign. It's a sign that God gives us that sanctifies us. Notice verse 16. Therefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. And then it goes on to quote the seventh day Sabbath command. The sign of God's people, the mark of God's people, brethren, is the Sabbath. There are other marks, but that is one of the marks that differentiates us from the world, is that we are marked by God and sanctified by God because we keep the Sabbath. Back to Revelation. Revelation 13. Verse 16. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on what they do and what they think. You know what the beast did? And if the beast did it, do you think the copy of the beast would do it? Yeah, let's see what the beast did. The beast, under the commands of Constantine, and about the year 300, made a decree that Sunday would be the day of worship. No other day could be worshiped. Now, what was happening before is you had some Christians that were keeping Saturday, the Sabbath. And you had some Roman citizens that were keeping Sunday. And they got along all right because they kept to themselves. But then it became a national law that you couldn't rest on the Sabbath. You had to work on the Sabbath because now Sunday was a day of rest. What would that have done to you if you were a Sabbath-keeping Christian? Would that have made you stand out? And not only that, not only don't you keep the right Sabbath, you're keeping Saturday instead of Sunday, you're also refusing to offer incense to the gods, including the emperor. No wonder we're having all these calamities. And then you could see how persecution would set in. So the emperor of the Roman government made a decree that Sunday was to be the day of worship. Now, not only did he say that Sunday was to be the day of worship in the decree, but he also said that you had to work on Saturday, which meant death, because you were not going to work on the Sabbath if you were a Christian. There was an image or a copy made of this. Did the great, false, universal, holy Roman church, did they ever make laws as a little horn says to change times and laws? Did they ever make laws about the Sabbath and Sunday? Oh, they certainly did. During the Middle Ages, they said, you know what? We're going to change Sunday and make that the Sabbath. And you know why we're doing it? Because we have the keys of Peter. Whatever we bind on the earth will be bound in heaven. We had a whole sermon on the Catholic Church a few months back. The reason is so that you'll understand what was happening here. And what happened is the image decided to do what the original did. The image, the church, patterned after the Roman Empire, Holy Roman Empire, decided also to change its day of rest from the Sabbath to Sunday. And so what happened? People were martyred by the millions in the Middle Ages because they would not keep Sunday as their Sabbath. They wanted to keep the Sabbath as their Sabbath. Do you think that this would affect your ability to work? Oh, yes. That's why it says here in verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number. Now we're going to look at the number. The number totals 666. Now, once again, let me review something about this number. This number totals 666. It is a number that can be counted, can be calculated. It is a number of the first king. It is a number of the empire. And it is a number of the man that lives in the empire. Notice what it says here, verse 17. The name of the beast or the number of his name. So the beast has a number. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate so it can be counted. The number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. Now, when you get into gyrations and try to do this and fit the Pope in there and various other things, it doesn't fit because the Pope is not the founder of this kingdom. The Pope is not a man of this kingdom. Here's the way it's interpreted by many of the followers of the Apostle John, Polycrates and Polycarp back in the 100s and the 200s. This is what they said it meant. Now, you're all familiar with the legend about the founder of Rome, Romulus and Remus. And there was a king. He didn't want to have any more sons because he didn't want his throne to be in jeopardy of being taken away from him. So he sends his wife and his daughters off to be Vestal virgins, which means you can't have children. Well, one of the daughters, according to the legend, gets pregnant by the god Mars, very conveniently. And the children are born, Romulus and Remus. We know them as the twins Gemini, Castor and Pollux, two of the stars up in the heavens. Another story there. And to make a long story short, they escape and are adopted by wolves, and the wolves raise them. Romulus kills Remus and becomes the emperor, the first king of Rome. That's the traditional myth. The real story is that there was a man whose name was Latinus. Now, let me spell you his name. Latinus. He was the real founder of Rome. Rome means Latin. That's what the word means, Latin. His name is spelled Latinos. If you're Hispanic, what does the word Latinos mean? It means that you're a man from the Latin race. It's also, Latinos, the name of the first king. It's also the name of the empire. Everybody with me? Fulfills all the requirements here. Now, Roman numbers or Roman letters can be used as numbers. X is 10, I is 1, V is 5. You know, we have X and V, that's 15. We have two X's, that's 20. We have a I before a V, which means you take away 1 from 5, it's 4, so forth and so on. Well, the Greek language also has numeric values for its letters. The Bible was written, the book of Revelation was written in Greek. So here we go. Here's how Latinos is spelled. Latinos. Which is a symbol, which signifies or means Latin man. L in Latin and Greek is 30. A is 1. T is 300. E is 5. I is 10. N is 50. O is 70. S is 200. You add them up, you get to 666, which is the name of the empire, the name of the first king, and the name of the people that lived in the kingdom, which fulfills all the requirements in verse 17 and 18. So what we have here in Revelation 13, the last couple of verses, is we have this numeric value identifying the founder of the Latin kingdom, which was Rome, Latinos. First king, name of the people, the Latinos were the people that lived there, and the name of the kingdom, the Roman kingdom. And that's the way it has been interpreted by the Church of God leaders all down through history. It was interpreted that way by Polycrates and Polycarp. It doesn't say here in Revelation how it's interpreted. It just tells us to interpret it. So what we have in Revelation chapter 13 is we have an expansion of the Holy Roman Empire. Now, here's another interesting thing. In Revelation chapter 13, verse 1, we have seven heads and ten horns. Now, you remember in Daniel chapter 2, we had the image and we had the ten toes. The ten toes are going to be alive and well when Jesus Christ returns. The stone is going to destroy them. They're contemporary. They live at the same time because they're destroyed in one event, the return of Christ. So the ten toes are all existing at the same time. These ten horns do not exist at the same time. You know how we know they don't exist at the same time? Because there's never been ten kings of the Roman Empire existing at the same time. There has, however, been ten kingdoms of Rome existing. Now, if you look on your chart, I don't have it. It lists the ten kings. The eighth king was Napoleon. The ninth king was Italy during World War II. There's another king that's coming later, which is going to be alive and well when Jesus Christ returns. That king is going to be destroyed by Jesus Christ. So in Revelation 13, chapter 1, the ten horns are not contemporary. They are one after another. They're successive kingdoms. So here in Revelation 13, we have the Holy Roman Empire being enlarged. We have how the dragon, the devil, Satan, used the Holy Roman Empire as a model for the great false universal church. And how both the Holy Roman Empire and the image that was made of it, the great false church, both have similarities. They both martyred God's people. And they both keep the same holidays. They both had the same mark. They both had the same name. And they both had the same number. All right? So it's very interesting what we've learned here in Revelation chapter 13. Just remember that Revelation 13 is an expansion of the Holy Roman Empire and how the church was modeled after it. The great false church was modeled after it. We have seen how the Roman Empire controlled the world and how it became a model for a great false church that would rise and follow in its doctrines. This great false church was not the Roman Empire, but it did control and use its religious power in conjunction with the state power, the two horns, to rule many peoples, nations, and tongues. Our next sermon is going to take an in-depth look at the scarlet-colored beast and the woman that rides it in Revelation 17. And we're going to find out who this woman is and what is the beast that she rides.